Hello, friends. I am Cindy Thompson, and this is a Resilience Project. This is a space where stories are shared and possibilities are discovered. I invite you to partner with me in cultivating resilience among humans, one conversation at a time. Adversity can appear unexpectedly with little warning, walking straight into our lives and moving in like an unwanted house guest. In some cases, it will present in the form of sudden loss, trauma, or a threat to the safety of ourselves and our family. In 2020, just after the pandemic started, the Kierstead family, like many Canadians and people around the world, were navigating COVID-19. Living in Eastern Canada in a small community, they could not have anticipated the life-changing trauma their family and community were about to face. On April 18th to 19th, 2020, a lone man set out to commit multiple shootings and set fires at 16 locations in the Canadian province of Nova Scotia. As a result of this tragic event, my guest, Jenny Kierstead, lost her only sister, and her daughter, Sophia, just 14 at the time, lost her aunt. It is difficult to comprehend when you hear about an event of this nature. With the wisdom of time and healing, however, Jenny and Sophia reached out to share their story in service to others. Jenny and Sophia are both inspired to educate, support, and encourage healthy practices for self-care. Their individual gifts and lived experiences offer an authentic and insightful presence to the conversation. There is a unique energy between this mother-daughter duo. With a spiritual essence, Jenny and Sophia have found a common bond, respect, and passion outside of their familial relationship. As we recorded this episode, they were attuned to one another's energy and emotional needs, pausing to breathe, support, or hold space as needed. When I first listened to one of their episodes on the podcast Spark, Jenny and Sophia were reflecting on their experience of loss, the challenges associated with early stages of COVID, and the ripples that continued to have an impact since the massacre. I knew they had something to offer the listeners of a Resilience Project. Let me tell you a little bit more about them. Jenny is a somatic therapist, author, leader in yoga and mindfulness, trauma survivor, and trauma-sensitive educator. She founded the national award-winning Yoga in Schools, Girl on Fire Empowerment, and Women of Light Wellness. Sophia is a grade 11 student. She is the co-CEO of Girl on Fire Empowerment for Teens with her mom, Jenny. She is also the co-host producer of Spark, a mother-daughter journey podcast in affiliation with Girl on Fire, which aims to bridge the generational gap. As a public speaker and mental health advocate, she travels around Atlantic Canada, speaking to students, conferences, and the Department of Education. She focuses on the importance of trauma literacy and mental wellness, a subject close to her heart, especially since the loss of her aunt, Lisa McCulley, who was killed in the Nova Scotia massacre. In this episode, we discuss post-traumatic growth, healing, and remembering that we are all warriors and heroes. Here is my conversation with Jenny and Sophia. Jenny and Sophia, thank you so much for taking some time out on Canada Day to meet with me. And I'm just thrilled to have you on a Resilience Project.
We're thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
These connections are so important. The chance for us to have a conversation about a really important event in Canada, in Nova Scotia, and in your lives. To really unpack the meaning behind it, the trauma, the challenges, and the ripples that continue to impact yourselves and your community. I want to learn what you've discovered about yourselves and to be able to help share it with those around the world. I'm excited for this today.
Mm-hmm.
I want to acknowledge the complexity of what we're going to talk about, because we're not just talking about grief. We're talking about trauma. We're talking about significant loss at two developmental stages, hearing from you, Jenny, as well as Sophia, as a 17-year-old, and what you would have experienced and what you've gone through as part of this journey. Can we start by acknowledging, Jenny, you lost your sister, Sophia, your aunt, in Canada's worst mass shooting in history. Yeah. Can you tell us about that 24-hour period to understand what was happening in your area?
Yeah, for sure. Jen, I feel like you can take the lead on this one because you found out before I did.
I'm feeling nervous.
Yeah.
And it's strange.
Yeah.
Because I talk and teach about this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to honor that this is not easy to talk about. We're bringing up more of a personal emotion. It's different when you're teaching.
Yeah.
Yesterday, someone said, when a woman shares the truth about her life story, the world heals a little bit more. What I have learned over the last few years is that even when my voice trembles and my hands shake, I still need to lean in and talk about this because it's so important and it's been so devastating. If our message can help to save someone else from experiencing something similar, then I'm happy to be afraid and sit in this place. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I really respect the vulnerability and the courage all wrapped up together and appreciate anything that you're willing to share with us.
April 18th was a very unusual time. We were 1 month into the pandemic and we were navigating our way through the fog of it. And Sophia was 14 at the time and she had taken on the responsibility of being our tech genius for her business.
Yeah.
And she literally saved our business. She wasn't a tech person prior to this. It was like the pandemic unearthed a latent skill.
Yeah.
Or you do come by it naturally. There's no way that I could have done it.
I just had to adapt. I feel like when you're thrown into certain situations, you don't really have a choice. I had to learn how to do it because I saw where everybody was going. It was online. I just thought, okay, I'll figure this out. We're all home anyways. I just started from scratch and went from there. I think it was a really important lesson for me because now I feel more comfortable starting from scratch with other things. Like the podcast, for example, I didn't know anything about editing or mics. And then I just worked my way up towards figuring it all out. But it's a scary journey when you first start out.
It speaks to resilience and how we adapt. It's how we rise to the occasion and lean in. I can hear examples of how you did that with your business and work together and to just explore the possibilities.
Yes. I think what's really interesting about COVID is that it brought us closer as a family. Mm-hmm. That's really important to the story because we were already so tight-knit. We had the support system in place without even really knowing that we did. That would be really important for future reference when we learned about everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blair, my husband and I are both educators and therapists. He's a cognitive behavioral therapist and I'm a somatic therapist. My approach is bottom up. His is top down.
Yeah.
We meet at the heart.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. We've always been very committed to secure attachment.
For sure.
Within the family unit. That morning, we had our meditation.
Every single day, we would do like a short meditation practice, like the entire family all together. Cause I was really nervous because COVID really shook a lot inside of me. I don't like not being able to control things. That for me was just really uncomfortable. I think it was for a lot of people. And mom, being the expert you are in wellness, you got us to start a daily meditation practice together as a family. That was already set up, those cushions were already there.
God, I do remember we had the candles out and the aromatherapy. And we would go around the circle and I think each person brought a quote.
We had certain tasks that we would divvy up for each person. One time it was like to research an animal or bring a quote to the circle. Yeah, it was really cool.
I think that was just really important.
Yeah, for sure.
In terms of our resilience, and it's a long journey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That cohesive family unit was really crucial for all of us. That morning, I had gotten up early. Blair does his morning walk, and I had sat down. I was just settling into my meditation, and he came in and said that my mother had called and that there was this strange report of an active shooter in Lisa's area. So I texted Lisa. We had been texting back and forth the day before.
Mm-hmm.
And the last text I got from her was a photo of her holding up a glass of wine, walking on the beach in Portapique. She was in her happy place. And that was about an hour before things had happened. This is on the morning of the 19th.
Yeah.
There was confusion, disbelief, really. Just everything's going to be fine.
I don't think we took it as seriously. We just don't hear about that in Nova Scotia. So it was more like just, like, oh, that's really strange.
It's interesting that we're having this conversation on Canada Day because you said in our previous conversation that you felt the ripple effect of everything that we experienced. It was a Canada-wide tragedy, just the sheer scope of it and magnitude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I came into the scene a little bit later because I think I slept in a little bit. And this was after you knew about everything. And then I came in and you told me not to worry, that it was all going to be okay, which I think we all thought was the case just because it was so incomprehensible and random to hear this news. And then things started to unravel a little bit. Then Dad got the call and then he relayed the news that my aunt and your sister had been murdered, which is
just insane
news for anyone.
It's so interesting. It's been 3 years.
Yeah.
I have processed this so deeply and we have spent thousands of dollars on treatment of various kinds. I've just had a 2-hour acupuncture session, and to hear those words, I notice myself feeling triggered. I don't know if it's the vagus nerve, but my voice gets shaky and my system's starting to shake. So I'm recognizing the trigger. So I'm going to take a few deep breaths.
And
if anyone else is feeling the same, feel free to join me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So little did we know that day just how dramatically and permanently our lives would change. Yeah, I think shock is such an instinctive, powerful, and brilliant response.
Interesting.
And yeah, being 3 years out, as I reflect back on those moments, I'm so grateful that my body has that intelligence to numb out because it was too great.
Mm-hmm.
Sophia speaks about trauma in teens. She's a public speaker and she speaks at high schools across Atlantic Canada. And I just really appreciate your take on the morning of and how I was incapable of taking care of myself, let alone you two. I know that you two were dialed in to your friends and their families.
Yeah.
Both Bella, who was 12, and Sophia, who was 14, they FaceTimed with their friends the entire day. I'm so grateful for that because I wasn't able to be there.
I would beg to differ because I think it's really interesting. When we heard the news, the very first thing you got us to do was crowd in a circle around those meditation cushions that we had set up, and we all held hands. So even though the news was so astronomical in a sense, your first reaction was, let's come together, the family unit, take care of the kids.
Yeah. Thanks, honey.
Yeah, for sure. I talk about a lot in my presentations about the zones of regulation. I was in like the blue zone, a little bit dissociated, wasn't really feeling a whole lot. I was dealing with my own shame surrounding the fact that I wasn't processing my grief in the normal way. And that was really interesting for me to go through as well. I'm seeing mom react in the way that people should react. And I think that's a portion of traumatic events people don't talk about, is that sometimes your reaction isn't textbook and you can feel bad for not presenting behaviors that you should present because others want to give you sympathy, right?
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that, because we're all different and how we're hearing it, how we're processing it is going to be unique to each of us. Some of it may be similar, but certainly the individual elements of what we bring, our life experience, our age can play a role in that.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's also worth mentioning that Blair and I were in the process of preparing for trauma-sensitive mindfulness training that summer. I was a columnist in our Chronicle Herald, the newspaper, and I had just written a column on trauma-proofing your kids. I felt equipped. It was a very strange feeling to be having these reactions in my body that I couldn't control, but also being cognitively witnessing myself travel through these phases of, okay, now I'm dissociating.
Right.
I was like theoretically analyzing my stress response and the social engagement system. I was really intent on making sure that we all stayed connected to each other. What I want to say is that there was unfortunately a lot of families affected.
Yeah.
And we all came to that moment with varying degrees of skill. While I would say we were fairly prepared skill-wise, I knew about trauma. I was leading workshops on trauma. I had just experienced significant previous traumas. I was actually in weekly EMDR treatment for PTSD. A few weeks before the massacre, I said to Blair, I'm making progress, but it's slow. And I just pray that nothing else happens because I don't know if my nervous system could handle it.
I remember you saying that.
Yeah, that's powerful. It's an example. We are never really going to be prepared for everything that might happen in our lives. But to have some systems in place, to have the supports in place, whether it's family or the treatments you suggested, I think that all of those can play a role in giving us a little bit of a leg up and an awareness.
Yeah, and I share that because while I had a leg up in the skills, I was disadvantaged. Being a leader in yoga and mindfulness and trauma sensitivity, I was hard on myself at first. I had to really practice self-compassion. I'm still moving through challenge, and that's hard for a leader in mental health to admit, but I think compassion is a really important part of the process. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Just to let ourselves off the hook and to know that it's not a one and done. There's no treatment protocol to finish. I'm just most sad for you little people. You're not so little now. You're 17. For this to be your childhood narrative, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is heartbreaking. But I've also been on the receiving end of a lot of the good we made the conscious choice to create. And I think that really speaks to resilience, because I personally feel like you can morph any experience and use that hurt instead of just letting it sit there and become worse and worse and worse. That's what I have really intended to do with everything. And sometimes it's really painful. I had a keynote a couple months ago, and I was speaking in front of my peers, which first of all is scary because you don't know how they're going to react. But I also felt I was a vessel. I had gone through this experience. I personally know what tools worked for me because you guys have passed them down to me. And I felt like it was my responsibility to share it with my peers who I know are struggling. Teens of today are going through so much on a daily basis. And if I can help just a tiny little bit, then maybe everything that has happened has a purpose and has a meaning in some way. And I think that as humans, we tend to search for that meaning in everything, and sometimes it can't be found. But if it helps us heal a little bit more, then that's what I'm going to do.
That's a great message, Sophia. I can just hear the wisdom in that. If you didn't have this lived experience, you wouldn't have known that's possible. As much as we want to protect our kids and we don't want them to go through hard things, none of us really want to invite that into our lives. But the reality is they are going to happen whether we want it or not. Like you said, it's what we make of it. It's what we do with that later that is really critical. And that's why I do this podcast, to share the stories of healing, to share the stories of hope that we can get through the hard things. We may not see it in the moment because we just need to do the work at that time, but it might be later that we realize the strengths and the gifts that have come from that experience and how we've grown, that post-traumatic growth.
Yeah.
I'm curious how close you were to where your sister lived or where the shooter was, because could he show up at your door?
It's a good question.
An hour 20.
Yeah.
So close enough. That didn't cross my mind. We had met him before.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was visiting a mutual friend and he showed up and we had a very cordial conversation, and it was 5 years before. And it's so surreal.
It's really surreal. It's
think
very
back
strange.
To that moment.
I remember it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was there. I came to the door.
Yes, you answered the door.
Yeah.
And he seemed very nice. And being the student of body language, I'm very direct and I make a lot of eye contact. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that he looked away. I thought, oh, he's not comfortable with intimacy, or he's not comfortable being seen. And it turns out he had some pretty massive shadows.
Yeah.
It didn't cross my mind for our own safety. That would come later as part of the expression of PTSD.
Yeah. The fact that we turned on the television and it was 10, 15, and it just kept going up and up and up. The most traumatizing portion of the entire thing, because it wasn't ending.
Here we were in COVID. That was so uncontrollable.
Yeah.
And now there's another threat. Yeah, that was just such a strange day. I felt myself shut down.
Right.
I can't follow the news. The one thing that I remember, we had our yoga mats laid out. So I spent the day on my yoga mat just writhing in agony. And I remember being on the phone with my mom, who was 80 at the time. I just kept asking her, how do we do this? She and my stepdad are both retired United Church ministers. They're midwives for grief. That's what they have done for their career. And I remember mom saying, just step by step, just moment by moment. And that's an ancient wisdom practice in yoga. And I think across all spiritual traditions is just to take life one moment at a time. Pada, pada, step by step.
Mm-hmm.
That has been, I think, one of the ways in which we've gotten through. But that wasn't an easy day. We did make it through the first day. I remember the day after, we had recently realized that Bella was insulin resistant. And I had this appointment with this new doctor on April 20th, a 1 hour consultation with this doctor. I could barely breathe. I couldn't eat. I was rolling around on the couch, but I sustained myself through this 1 hour consultation because you got to stay in the role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I share that because we're all warriors. We're all just heroes in our own way, like showing up for our kids and doing what we have to do. And my mom showed up for me on that day. And it was a hard day for everyone. And thank God for shock.
Yeah. I think Bella and I probably had degrees of shock. We were able to jump on the trampoline the day after and laugh. Mom and I have talked about this, but afterwards, I had the introspectiveness to feel a little bit guilty for sharing joy with people.
Yeah.
Because we were going through such an intense, dark period of time. But I think it's just a really good example of how feelings coexist, and you're never really strictly feeling one thing all the time. I guess that differs for everybody. But I wasn't feeling one thing all the time, like continuously.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that I had to go through as well, is just balancing the fact that I would have happy moments and not feeling bad for being okay sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Beautifully said. Yes. Because our brains can only handle so much for so long and give us a break. They give us a chance to jump on the trampoline and feel moments of peace, even in the darkest grief.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
I couldn't help really dialing into the fact that we were all in COVID and this massacre happened right as we were just adjusting to those initial stages. There was so many unknowns associated with COVID alone. And it wouldn't be easy for you to get together with your community, even with family members, to support one another physically, to hug one another. And knowing how important that is in grief, to share our stories, to share that experience with others, that must have been another complexity to this for you.
Oh, yeah. People were so incredible. Amazing. The entire Canadian community. We received quilts from the quilting community across Canada. And my quilt came from Krista Hennebury, who lives, I think she's on Vancouver Island in BC. We had such an outpouring of support from friends and perfect strangers from near and far. Leave it to Lisa. If she had to go, she left us surrounded in so much love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, first off, yes, it was very difficult not being able to share physical affection with other people. My love language is physical touch. I isolated myself completely from the outside world when everything happened because I was so scared of my dad getting COVID and then losing another family member. I had been exposed to the harsh unpredictabilities of life, and really no one could guarantee me that wouldn't happen again. That portion of who I am, someone who really cares about being close to people, I blocked that off for a while, and it has had lasting impacts on me as a person. I only really started hanging out with people again last year. I came to really rely on the family. I was home a lot, but I also think that socially, I'm just starting to get back into the flow of it. Sometimes when I'm in a social situation, I'll have flashbacks where I'm, oh my gosh, if 10-year-old Sophia could see me right now, she would be in shock because I'm so comfortable in crowds of people. I think the added component of COVID did affect it. Maybe the healing process would have been less painful, but I don't know if I would have had such a story and such tools to share.
What helped you get back out there, Sophia, to start stepping back into school and more people?
The vaccine, for sure, yeah. Also, exposure therapy. I don't know if I'm saying that the right way, but I would do it in increments, little by little. I actually had a part-time school schedule. So I would be on and off. I went to school 3 days of the week, and that was really helpful for me because I was taking tiny steps. And I think this ties into what Mom said by just do the next right thing, take the next right step. And that's what I did. And thankfully enough, I had a family that was able to support me through that because they both worked from home. When I couldn't go to school, they were okay with that. Actually, Dad got sad when I wasn't at home. I had that support, and that's what really helped me get through. Yeah.
What would you say to Sophia back there in the early days, knowing what you know now?
I think I would just tell her that there's a moment beyond this, because the way that my brain works, I tend to see everything like it will be this moment forever and ever, and things will never change. Even though I've been exposed to the fact that life changes constantly without our ability to control it. When I get into moments like that where I feel as though I'm back there, because I get that a lot, where I feel like I'm stuck, I just need to remind myself that everything's an ebb and flow and everything is changing constantly, whether that be for the good or for bad. It's nice to think of life like that because you know that stuff will come up, you'll deal with it, and there is a tomorrow. I just keep searching for the tomorrow.
So wise. Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. The wisdom of this young woman. I'm so impressed. How about for you, Jenny? If you could go back and say something to that Jenny in the early days.
I think that I had a practice run with my brother's death. I guess the wisdom part of myself is proud of how I went through it. I was just very aware and very reflective and really chose to take care. I paid attention to what I needed, which was different every day. Sometimes I needed solo time, other times I needed people. I really advocated for myself and my spiritual connection to my siblings. Without sounding too woo-woo, or maybe sounding way too woo-woo for some people, I consider myself still in relationship with them. Right after it happened, I became obsessed with their garden. And we moved into a house that the previous owner loved gardening, and I didn't know much about gardening. But that summer, I took a really keen interest, and I just had to have my feet and hands in the soil.
Yeah.
And I was obsessed with rhododendrons. A few months after, I found out that Lisa loved rhododendrons as well. It's those moments of synchronicity where I just felt connected to her, and I continued to imagine myself connected to her. It may be exercising my imagination. It may be true. I don't care. If it helps me heal, I'm going to continue to imagine that connection to nature and people and to myself and to my siblings has been really crucial. I also want to say that there were three of us in my family of origins. I'm the last lone survivor, and it changes you. In today's world, dying at 47 and 49 is fairly young. I'm a mindfulness practitioner anyway, but the degree of wonder that I have for life.
I love that in you.
Yeah. I must have this childlike sense of wonder and fascination with the world and with people and with beauty and grace. That's helped get me through as well. Mm-hmm. Blair, my husband, he's a Cape Bretoner. If you haven't been to Cape Breton, you'll have to take the trip.
Yeah.
He calls it the province of Cape Breton, but they're ridiculously funny people. And so his humor has just really helped us to...
He just lightens everything. When everything feels very heavy and crushing, he's the one that will kind of take that load off a little bit just by, space back into the moment, I feel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He grew up a child of an alcoholic. I think he assumed the role of the comedian, and now he does it with awareness. And it's just perfect, because in those dark moments when you don't think about joy or laughter, he inserts it, and it makes the moment more manageable.
Yeah.
What I hear, Jenny, is that you trusted yourself, whether it's trusting in the ability to still hear from your siblings, to communicate with them and channel their energy in these moments, whatever it is you're doing, but also in what you needed next. And you just went with it. You trusted it. And sometimes we can overthink it. I hear that as part of your resilience is just learning to trust yourself and to trust the community around you.
I don't believe you pulled that out, because what I said a few weeks ago is that the root of my anxiety is that I don't trust. Yeah. So when I focus on the tragedy, when I focus too much on the information that the public inquiry discovered, I lose trust. Mm. And it's so easy to go there. And yet our practices keep us in that state of trust. Thank you for mirroring that back, because I go off the rails when I stop trusting. Such an important piece. Thank you, Cindy.
I heard that loud and clear.
Wow.
In what you have discovered, what you've been leaning into. Sophia, I'm curious how this has informed your practices today, whether it's your public speaking or working with others or even as a family. I'm hearing a hint of just being present and enjoying the wonder of this moment.
I have learned not to take moments for granted, and we hear that a lot. But even as I experienced really horrible acne right after the event, it was probably because of stress, I started to wish that my life would pass faster. I started not living in the moment, and I just wanted to rush through everything. I realized that those moments are so precious. There's something to learn from every single moment, even if it's in your darkest moment. I have the awareness I have today, partly because of it. I catch myself now. I catch myself when I'm with my friends. I catch myself when I'm with my family. I take a step back and I smile to myself and I look at everything that's around me, and I realize that there is pockets of good in everything. I know that sounds like really idealistic mindset, but it's where I've gotten to in life. I'm not always like this. I have my days. I think everyone always will. But it's informed me to really just be present a little bit more to the world and everything that's going around.
Some of the things that are really hard that we're going through, we just want to speed through and get to the other side, to the healing. Yet that healing journey is a big part of our growth there in discovering what we're made of in our strengths. And as we were just speaking of, to trust in ourselves that we have the ability to get through this moment that we're in right now. 100%. The overarching message that we can get through hard things and learn about ourselves, even though it's not something we would ever wish on anybody.
Yes.
Yeah, you've definitely been tested on so many levels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We talked about this in the initial meeting, how people say there's like a before and after. I definitely see that with this event. I am a different person. I don't know if the scars of the past will ever fully heal. I think that we can both really testify to this. It's about now working with them instead of battling that darkness and trying to ignore it or push it away. That's what I've learned.
Yeah.
Is that you say a lot with your anxieties, you've entered in relationship with it. I'm entering in relationship with the darkness because I have accepted that it's going to be a part of my journey. If I'm fighting it constantly, I don't know if that's going to help anything.
Well said. So. And I imagine, Sophia, to have experienced this at such a young age. For us as adults, we often have so many years of other joyful moments and experiences and successes that we've had in our lives that we can draw on proportionately. In your young life at 14, for this to have happened and to have experienced these losses and this traumatic event and COVID, you've gone through so much for someone of such a young age that you're going to have years and years ahead of you to build those beautiful moments that will still be part of your story to balance it out.
I love that. I have to remember that. That's well so said. Special.
Well said.
Yeah. I will be thinking back to that when I find myself down for sure.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, let me check with you because throughout this conversation, it's not easy. I really want to express my gratitude for such vulnerability together. Can I ask if there's any other resilience practices that you have come to rely on that we haven't drawn out or mentioned that got you through?
I think for me, yoga is the uniting of body, mind, and spirit. We were granted an allowance from the government to use for therapy. We asked for permission to include body therapies. Yeah. Acupuncture, osteopathy, massage, chiropractic care, all of that became part of my healing protocol, which people don't think a lot about. They do think, oh, I have trauma. I have to go see a psychiatrist.
Or like therapy,
and get medicated. And while I'm not opposed to medication, and it may be in my future, we have made it this far by treating our whole system. Yeah, I think that has been absolutely crucial. And not every treatment works for every person. You do have to shop around. We have been seeing an acupuncturist that we have a soul connection. We love each other profoundly, and her treatment heals me on so many levels. I think that is an important point to incorporate all aspects of ourselves. Yeah.
I think for me, it's learning to be vulnerable with my peers, which I know sounds really strange, but my friends, they're there to hold a safe space. And I think this, it's really important. What would you share with your friends? Sometimes they aren't capable of holding that space for you, and that's okay. That's not always their role. And it's all right if it's just going to be like a superficial, playful friendship. But my friends have opened their arms and have asked me, what can I do for you? They've been open to deep and honest conversations. I have learned to not feel guilty whenever I start sharing about my issues, because I have difficulty with sharing too much or taking up too much space sometimes. I have learned that if they're okay with it, it's all right to share. And that social connection for me, the connection I get from sharing, even if I have vulnerability hangover afterwards, which is basically every single time, it's worth it in the long run. I think coupling both therapy and deep, honest conversations with my peers has been instrumental in my healing process.
Mm. Isn't she incredible?
Incredible. You deserve to be proud, Mama. Yes, for sure.
In support of what Sophia said, here I am, a yoga teacher, and I didn't say anything about yoga. I spoke about all of the other modalities that I received treatment from. I think that's an important point because I needed support.
Mm-hmm.
And yoga is just such a very private practice for me.
Yeah,
it's solo. And what I needed, especially in the first few years after our tragedy, was people.
Yeah.
I remember there were times when I would go see my chiropractor and lay down on her table and she would just hold my head and wipe my tears.
Mm-hmm.
I needed that human support.
Yeah.
So yoga and mindfulness are really important, but also allowing ourselves to receive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're not meant to go through these things alone. I definitely draw out the community from what you both have just identified. In knowing that we shouldn't be just burying it and trying to cope independently, I talk a lot about radical interdependence and being able to tap into the resources of others to know that we can be vulnerable. And in doing so, it is sharing it, as you suggested at the beginning, Jenny, in starting this conversation. So we've come full circle.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm a hot mess.
Oh, are you? You look good.
No, you look great. Can I just express my gratitude for the space and time that we've had here today? And really, virtually, we're strangers, and yet we've been able to be in conversation on some of the most important parts of your life and your experiences. I really want to say that I'm so thankful that you would be willing to share that with us.
Cindy, thank you for being the master that you are at this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good. This has been really special.
You are such a healer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's honestly my honor to be able to meet with you and have you here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My pleasure. I truly appreciate the raw, authentic, and transparent way that Jenny and Sophia have been willing to be here with us for this episode. As you can tell, even with time, these traumatic events make it very difficult to revisit those memories, yet it is essential. This family had some really meaningful and healthy practices in place during the early stages of COVID-19, such as gathering each morning and taking time for mindfulness or meditation. Their connection and closeness were a strong foundation for what they would need in the days ahead. This is a beautiful example of why it is vital to develop our resilience practices proactively. Between Jenny and Sophia, there are just so many recommendations to consider that I'm going to just try my best to pull out a few of them with you here. We are reminded that everything has a purpose and meaning. We may not see it at the time, but we may reflect on some of the growth and wisdom we have acquired at a later date. Take life one moment at a time. When you are overwhelmed, just step into the process and focus on doing the next right thing. And pay attention to what you need every day. What you need right now might be different than yesterday or even tomorrow. Try to trust in yourself and your inner wisdom. And there will be an ebb and flow in life. This moment will not last forever. And as Sophia said, there is a tomorrow. We are also reminded that feelings can coexist. It is natural to have two emotions at once. There isn't a need to judge these feelings, but just to notice and honor them. And learning to be vulnerable can be challenging, but worth it in the long run. Find those people who will hold the space for your vulnerability. And remember, not everyone will have the courage to be that person. I really hope that you'll check out their podcast called Spark for more meaningful and wise conversations with Jenny and Sophia. Whatever battle you are fighting right now, I hope you will remember that you too are a warrior and a hero of your own story. Here's a couple of questions for you. What resilience practices have resonated with you from this episode? And what are the next right steps that you are willing to take today? In the words of Maya Angelou, I can be changed by what happens to me, but I refuse to be reduced by it. Remember, friends, that adversity is inevitable while resilience is a practice. Thank you for listening to this episode of A Resilience Project. We would not be doing this podcast without you. If you or someone you know has an inspirational story or is helping to build resilience in their community, please email me at cindy@aresilienceproject.com. In fact, email me either way. I would love to hear from you. My hope is to feature an episode periodically on your letters of resilience. I'm very interested in hearing your story of how you have tackled hard things and what worked for you. With your permission, I hope to share some of these stories along the way with our listeners. Also, check out my website, aresilienceproject.com, to learn more about our amazing guests. Your presence here is important because together we are cultivating a village of resilient individuals. You are creating a space for their stories to be shared and a sacred space for learning to occur. I also have a favor. I would love for you to go to your preferred podcast platform, rate and review the podcast so that we will know how we're doing. I also would like to express my gratitude to the amazing team of volunteers that have jumped on board to support this project. You will find each of those beautiful people on my website on the team page. As you go about this week, I invite you to think about one way that you can continue to grow your resilient muscle. What is one thing you can start with today? See you next week.